In this final chapter of our MK Ultra series, we reach the edge of what's knowable and what might be unknowable. In 1995, a woman named Kathy O'Brien claimed she survived a hidden CIA program called Project Monarch, a trauma-based mind control operation allegedly using dissociation, symbolism, cannibalism, presidential diamond programming, and pop culture to create programmable human beings, which if you listen to my other MK Ultras, you knew that was Sidney Gottlieb's plan the whole time. The extreme claims made in this book actually intersect with real intelligence programs, real psychological techniques, and real historical abuses, as well as modern-day connections to Epstein and claims made by Sasha Riley. We're going to go through the Transformation of America book. Then we're going to look at Charles Manson's involvement with MH Chaos, with Tom O'Neill's Chaos book. Today, we're wrapping up our four-part deep dive into MK Ultra today on occult symbolism and pop culture. Now today we're wrapping the whole thing up, and it's here's the bad part. Here's what you're not gonna like, because it's a new month, and I owe my supporter feeds a bonus show every month. This one lands right in that territory, and let me explain why I'm doing it. Also, don't go nowhere. I've got a coupon. You can get this thing for free. All right, so stick with me here. More than free, it's actually technically gonna cost me some money, but I'll explain. So the content we're discussing today, as I was making these notes, I said, this is way too hot for the free feed, the YouTube, right? Because as you know, I'm back on YouTube, at Occult Symbolism, like and subscribe. Which, by the way, I read your comments about my MK Ultra Part 1. I was wearing the sleeves, so I'm overcompensating with no sleeves today. Anyway, I was going through my notes, and I said, how the heck am I going to say any of these words on YouTube? And my thought was, you know, I'm just not going to put it on there. I'm not going to put it on YouTube because I don't want to risk my third torching. But then the timing of this ran into February, so my idea, I thought, well, you know what? I'm just going to make this a bonus show. In part one, we explained what MK Ultra was. We talked a little bit about pop culture, movies, celebrities, David McGowan's book Program to Kill about mind control killers. And that pop culture element, keep that in mind for part four today, all right? And in part two, we talked about Gordon Thomas's stuff, the program through the eyes of William Buckley, a little bit on Operation Often, the black magic aspect of it, and some of the crazy doctors involved and psychic driving techniques and assassination manuals. Then in part three, we went through Poisoner in Chief, the book about Sidney Gottlieb, the man running the program. Talked a lot about the Operation Paperclip and Operation Midnight Climax and all these, you know, the horny nerds in the CIA doing their thing. And today we're going through Transformation of America, which is Kathy O'Brien's book, which is where we get the origin for the conspiracy about Project Monarch. If you ever watch any videos on, you know, YouTube or Instagram or TikTok, and you see these conspiracy guys are like, oh, she's got the butterfly next to her head, right? Including yours truly. I've done this too. Like the butterfly signifies Project Monarch, which signifies she's been mind controlled, right? This is where it comes from. And you're going to be a little shocked when I read you the notes of the claims being made in this book, all right? Then we're going to round it back out with another sort of taste of the, I'm not going to say rational, more normal, more acceptable form of conspiracy for the public, and that's Charles Manson connected in with MH Chaos. And then we're going to go through the in conclusion, and I'll give you my sort of final thoughts on mind control and where we go from here. All right. So we've got a lot to get through. So without and also I got to mention that when we go through Kathy O'Brien's book, again, this is a pretty big book. I'm going to give you the things that I find interesting, and I'll try to sort of tell her story as we go. If you want to dig deeper or connect more dots that I don't bring up, by all means, like, get her book. It's interesting. It's an interesting read, and you got to know it if you want to be one of these conspiracy guys talking about butterflies and mind control, all right? So Kathy writes this book in, or it's published, I should say, 1995, and from what I can tell, she seems to be the first to ever discuss this Project Monarch, meaning this Monarch thing was never really officially acknowledged or found in the CIA documents. The source is her, all right, and her story and her testimony. And the curious aspect here is that she is claiming that basically, the MKUltra projects continued well past their revelation to the public in the 1970s. All right. And the book, let's explain how the book is laid out. It's an autobiography, but there is a foreword by Mark Phillips. And Mark Phillips is the guy that helped her recover these memories. And he says, you know, he worked for the Department of Defense and trauma-based mind control projects and mind control research. So, of course, he's the expert for this kind of thing. And he takes the credit for liberating Kathy and her daughter Kelly from this mind control system. And he writes basically part one of the book, which lays out the scope of the whole program. He describes mind control being the same thing as information control. Mind control, he explains mind control as secret knowledge, which obviously is power, right? And that ends with control. So you can see how these things are connected and why the powers that be want to maintain these things. And Mark even suggested an occult link to all of this. I'm going to read you from the book. In 1971, the New York Times reported a story on the Central Intelligence Agency and occult research, the basis of which was gained through a collection of documents released by the U.S. government printing office under the Freedom of Information Act. This was a report to Congress and clearly showed that the CIA was interested in the cause and effect clinical findings that occult religious practices have on the black arts practitioners and or the observer's mind. Of particular interest to the CIA were the heightened levels of suggestibility that certain occult rituals produced in the minds of practitioners. Cannibalism and blood... can I say this red liquid stuff? Because I think I'm probably still in the YouTube preview here. Cannibalism and blood rituals were ranked highest in the order of importance to their research. Now, these claims were made in the 1990s, like I said, and that Gordon Thomas book, Operation Often, wasn't released till 2007. All right, so my initial thought was, well, that's weird. How did they know about it beforehand? So I dug into it, and it turns out Operation Often was actually revealed in 1977 during the Senate hearing, according to Wikipedia. Now, there's discussion about how information control can lead to brainwashing, and this is all done through the manipulation of the mind and advertising, which connects us into the world of Edward Bernays and Carl Jung and symbolism and so on. And Mark Phillips cites the 1947 National Security Act as a way to protect the criminal activity being conducted by the U.S. government. So there it is again, that 1947 National Security Act. Rearing its ugly head. In the 1980s, Mark would meet a man named Alex Houston, who wanted Mark to establish some international business for manufacturing in China. And this is how he meets Kathy O'Brien, because Alex Houston was married to Kathy O'Brien. And Mark finds out that Alex was transporting Kathy and her daughter Kelly, because she had Kelly with a different man named Wayne Cox, who she alleges was a serial killer Satanist. All right, so Alex Houston is not Kelly's father, but he is married to Kathy. Okay. But he finds out that he was taking them to Bohemian Grove to be used as sex workers. And he would be approached by some intel folks who basically tell him to kill Alex Houston. The story gets pretty convoluted. The whole book is, I would argue, a very difficult read. It's actually pretty convoluted throughout. There's a lot of huge claims made, and then they just move on to the next sentence like nothing was claimed. It's like, wait a minute, what? You know, it's like, well, then Bill Clinton mind controlled and raped me. So then I was on my way to Disneyland, and you're like, wait a minute, what? You know, like that's how I felt reading the whole book. So then Mark helps Kathy and Kelly move away from Alex Houston and his control over them. But he had to use elements of mind control, apparently, to get them to leave Houston, which he calls the deprogramming. And this is pretty wild. I Googled around for Alex Houston to see if this person exists. And because the book tells us he was a ventriloquist and a country western singer and a hypnotist from Tennessee. So I find an obituary of a guy named Walter Alex Houston, who died in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, who was a country west ventriloquist. And if you go through the comments, people are all up in there talking about how he was Kathy O'Brien's mind control handler. Wild stuff. Again, either this is, it's one of two things. Either this is incredibly slanderous, or it's a really dark conspiracy, okay? Now, he takes, so Mark takes Kathy and Kelly to Alaska for the full deprogramming. They describe the process around page 20, if you're interested. And it gets into what sounds like paranoid delusion stories about secret nods and mysterious contacts. Like, he's got to contact a programmer named Steve Hassan, who ends up in Alaska and tries to program Kathy to escape from Mark. And he claims that Hassan was friends with Dr. Jolly West and Dr. Margaret Singer, you know, part of MKUltra. And I looked this guy up, and as a real guy, Mark Hassan wrote books on mind control, and he was apparently a deprogrammer of cult members after he himself was deprogrammed from a time that he was in a cult in the 70s called the Unification Church. So was Margaret Singer. She has a song with, let me rephrase. Margaret Singer was a real person. She actually has a song with Dr. Jolly West, of all things. So Kathy's father, Earl O'Brien, was also involved in this as well, okay? And if you followed my research into the Sasha Riley story, like, that's how he got into this circle of traumatic abuse and stuff. He wasn't really mind-controlled, but he was abused through his adoptive father. So now it's 1990. They moved to Seattle. Mark questions mental health. He calls it mental hell, so he's very critical of it. He then talks about how the Church of Somethingtology have been denouncing mental health. Also, because Hubbard found the cure-all, which he got when working Naval Intelligence, and he calls this the Behavioral Modification Program Dianetics, named after his first wife, Diane. This is how Mark describes mental health. He says, and I quote, "In the present climate, referring mind control victims to mental health professionals for treatment would be tantamount to subjecting a patient needing delicate surgery to a surgeon who is blindfolded and handcuffed." Mark also asserts that the Nazism philosophies are still running our government in secret, including in Huntsville, Alabama, where you had all the rocket program and Wernher von Braun and Operation Paperclip. He alleges that Kathy and Kelly were taken there once by Alex Houston for torture and production of films, right? The you know, child and adult films. Towards the end of the book, Kathy talks about a plan they had to get rid of her in a snuff film, which, again, takes me to these claims made by Sasha Riley, who I did a whole two-hour deep dive on Breaking Social Norms, if you haven't heard that. Because he had recently become a subject of conversation because he was interviewed by a woman on Substack and they published the story that he was adopted by this William Riley guy and trafficked as a boy to Epstein and Trump and crazy stuff, right? And William Riley was supposedly a trafficker, pilot, investigator, and he was shaking down victims of this ring. And there's several audio files and lots of pretty wild and vivid claims made, right? I'm not saying I doubt it. I'm just saying they're less out there than Kathy O'Brien's claims by light years, okay? So if you're one who's like, you know, I believe victims, I believe Kathy O'Brien's story, then you should also believe Sasha Riley's story. Like, when you look at the two stories, Sasha Riley's is also a little out there, right? But Kathy O'Brien's is like way out there. And again, not judging, not saying that they're falsification or nothing. I'll tell you what I think by the end of this, of the story though. Now, the writer of the article about Sasha Riley claims that there's all these documents and stuff and so on, right? And what's interesting is that William Riley, the adoptive father, is also from Tennessee, which is where we tie into Andy Houston, also from Tennessee, from Kathy O'Brien's story, right? But yeah, it's kind of out there. Freeman Fly interviewed Kathy O'Brien, and what I found interesting was if you go to that interview at the 16-minute mark, he mentioned something about Trump killing puppies. And I think he's being facetious, like he was defending Trump, like, oh, the media is so hard on this guy because he apparently thought Trump was the savior of all this, which, you know, as you know, I disagree with. And that's fine. Freeman's still my red pill daddy. We just disagree on this, apparently. But he mentioned something like, oh, yeah, Trump, there's these stories of Trump killing puppies. That was in 2019. He recorded that with Kathy O'Brien. Sasha Riley's claim is the same thing. He said that he saw that happen in the 80s, right? It's a whole crazy ball of wax. I would highly recommend you listen to that 2-hour. In fact, I'll put a link in the show notes if you haven't. The Breaking Social Norms, where I go through it, right? But there's all these stories in Kathy O'Brien's book about local authorities harassing them because they're in the South and they're in Tennessee, which is exactly what Sasha Riley goes through. Kathy says that the government tries to take her daughter Kelly because at one point they were homeless and I guess she had asthma. But the book also provides documentation. I mean, photos and documents of her saying that I was here. These were the people I was talking to. These were the claims we were being submitting to the police and police reports and so on, right? But there's, like I said, there's a lot of wild claims being made in the book, like the coach for, I think, the Detroit Tigers, Sparky Anderson, was in on abusing them. A guy named Boxcar Willie, some musician, was abusing them. But she's got all these documents of police reports and photos, you know, confirming Kelly was SA'd, apparently, and documentation of them claiming to be mind controlled. So if these are all made up stories, Kathy believed it, right? They were actually investigating this. She was actually pursuing it. So just like Sasha, I will say that I believe that they believe this. Okay. I don't think they're just trying to like grift on a lie. So that leaves you two options here: is either they're mistaken through mental illness or falsely recovered memories, or they're telling the truth and all these crazy stories are real, which, given the state of affairs in the world, that seems less crazy, right? Over the years that we've seen stuff happening and people being in these circles of abuse. So then we get into part two. This is the part written by Kathy, all right? And she's like, look, I was a victim of Project Monarch. And she explains what it is. She says, under MKUltra Project Monarch trauma-based mind control, I lost control over my own free will thoughts. I could not think to question, reason, or consciously comprehend. I could only do exactly what I was driven to do. Those who controlled my mind and ultimately controlled my actions claimed to be aliens, demons, and gods. But it was my experience that these perpetrators of New World Order controls were and are bound by fully human confines despite their terror tactic claims and illusions. The true laws of nature and the same laws of man do indeed apply to them. And plot spoiler, we're going to find out that she subscribes to the shape-shifting lizard people theory. Okay? That's why she's talking like that. She goes on to talk about how she was a presidential model mind-controlled slave and the reason she's writing all this is to expose this shadow government. And she also says that there's this Nazi government that's Hitler's New World Order that's running things. All right. She also is saying she's trying to get her daughter back. Apparently the state took her. I don't know what the update is on that. She compares this to JFK. She says most Americans old enough to remember recall exactly where they were and what they were doing when President JFK was shot. His assassination traumatized the nation and provided an example of how the human mind photographically records events surrounding trauma. She also said that her father, Earl O'Brien, is a pedophile. And her mother was an incest survivor with MPD, multiple personality disorder, who let all of this happen. Now, her recount of the things that happened to her are very graphic. Things that her father would do to her. Her father also a victim to occult ritual and, sexual abuse. And both parents were multi-generationally abused, which is important to the Project Monarch program. She recalls watching her father murder someone when someone saw her being assaulted as a child in the woods, so she saw him murder him. She details how the abuses would keep creating multiple personalities in order for her to hope. For her to cope. Excuse me. Her Uncle Bob, trying to find my links here. Her Uncle Bob was also involved with Project Monarch, and his job was as a recruiter to recruit multi-generationally essayed children with MPDs, multiple personality disorder, for genetic mind control studies. And her father apparently signed her up for it because he was facing charges for producing these child animal videos, if you know what I'm saying. And she says she has photographic memory, which is a byproduct of people that but people that have MPD. She says she was first sent to Michigan State Senator Guy Vandersjat for being sexually assaulted, and this guy would become the Republican chairman. She talks about fairy tale themes used in the methodologies of Monarch in order to confuse fantasy with reality for children, right? So she had to watch a lot of stories from Disney, Alice in Wonderland, Cinderella, and Wizard of Oz. And we'll explain why here in a bit. She said that she went to Catholic confession about her abuse, and the priest told her father what she said. And then the next time that she went into confession, the priest put his junk through the partition and told her to perform. She calls him by name, too. She says, Father Thalen, and nothing immediately came up on a Google search. But again, this is 1995, and this was actually, years before people realized how horrific the abuses of the Catholic Church and the priests were doing. It just adds a little bit of credence to it, right? She talks about being indoctrinated with the Omerta that we had talked about before from the MKUltra people, and it's the vow of silence, right? She had to take the vow of silence with the Catholic Church and the Jesuits. And part of the system was understanding that there are multiple dimensions that the church believes in. You've got purgatory, hell, and heaven, and so on, right? And that's what she would be subjected to, is trans-dimensional, visitation, I guess. And she compares a lot to Wizard of Oz. Like, that's the idea, is like you're going to another dimension. She talks about how they gave her this rosy cross necklace, and they told her, look, this is like your ruby slippers. You need to wear it in order to be able to return home after you're traversing into these other dimensions with your MPD. Okay. Now, the rosy cross is, illuminate confirm, utilized by Rosicrucians to symbolize the union of the spiritual and material, which makes me think what my thoughts are. The purpose here is you are fracturing this child's mind into two through trauma, forcing her to go over the rainbow to some other dimension. And her wearing this necklace helps reunionize the body back with the spirit and back into this world, is what I would guess. She talks about how she would be trafficked to Jerry Ford, Senator Robert Byrd, and they would go into these other dimensions at Mackinac Island in Michigan. She had heard that Pierre Trudeau, who was the Prime Minister of Canada in the 60s, was one of them because he was loyal to the Vatican and Father Dan, one of the people abusing her. Trudeau, she said, would activate her rite of silence and guide her into her inner dimension so he could sexually assault her. And, the Trudeau bloodline, still in positions of power, right, up in Canada. Now, her entertainment was controlled. She could only watch certain entertainment. She would watch Wizard of Oz as preparation for going over the rainbow, or Cinderella as an example of transformation of a slave to a beautiful princess. She says her brother was abused, but not part of Monarch, and was forced to watch Pinocchio. And she says he's still obsessed with this Disney stuff to this day, you know, a Disney adult, which makes me wonder about all those Disney adults out there. Like, did they suffer some kind of trauma? And like, this is a reaction that they can't stop watching it. I don't know. I don't watch Disney growing up, so I have no feedback on that. She talks about doublespeak, like how she would watch Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds with a theme that there's no place to hide from the birds. And she was saying that this is how they would talk to her in reference to Senator Robert Byrd. There's no place to hide from the bird. And she talks about how this language would appear in movies and songs, like Merle Haggard, who she claims was a CIA operative. He had songs like Freedom Train and Over the Rainbow. She asserts that these are part of this sort of programming. She would get sent to a Catholic school and would meet with other Monarch victims with MPDs. She would also go to President Ford for abuse. Allegedly, again, all this is allegedly, according to her. Catholics would do at these places that she would run in, they would do satanic rituals to enforce the trauma during the abuse. She also said she was taken to Wyoming, where she saw Dick Cheney doing human hunting, and they called it a most dangerous game. And this is part of her being trained to know that there's no place to hide again, right? And this one is kind of crazy, because Dick Cheney would years later in 2006 shoot someone in the face while hunting. Remember that? It was an accident, of course. And then in 2020, we had the film The Hunt, showing us the same thing, right? Same thing about elites hunting humans. And then finally, the news this 2025 about the elites paying to hunt humans in Bosnia. So, I mean, is it that far-fetched? I would say not. I would say that's not that crazy. She would also go on trips to Tampa, MacDill Air Force Base. I've been there before, not to brag. Disney World for mind control. She had NASA programming, where she was obsessed with following the Yellow Brick Road to Nashville and moving there. She would eventually meet a guy named Wayne Cox and was ordered to marry him through Senator Byrd. This is before Alex Houston, right? And Byrd was, at this point, her owner, and Cox was her handler, all right? And Wayne Cox was supposed to abuse her and procreate with her to have the daughter Kelly, so that Kelly would be part of Project Monarch. She says Wayne Cox was a serial killer, and this was the things he had to do to avoid going to jail for it. And it's interesting, all of her experiences being in the South and Tennessee, because again, Sasha Riley says the same thing about his experience. And, you know, the Dixie, he says that his father was tied in with the Dixie Mafia, which was in prominence in the South from the 60s to the 80s. So that kind of could lend itself to all of this. She says Wayne Cox was raised by witches, and he would cut off people's hands to make hands of glory that he could sell in the occult underground, because they had thought that the hand of a hanged man had magical powers. You see this in Wicker Man, by the way. And he was also into cannibalism and eating the body and drinking the liquids and having perverted interpretations of the Bible as well. Cox was an admirer of Jim Jones and Charles Manson as prime examples of CIA mind control. Now, mind you, Kathy wrote this in 1995. And it wasn't until, you know, late 2010s when Tom O'Neill wrote Chaos that we got some definitive concrete evidence that, like, dude, maybe he was part of this program. Because remember, they got rid of all the documents. We don't know. Wayne Cox would have Kathy become Mormon. Doesn't elucidate much on that, but that happens. Louisiana Senator J. Bennett Johnston also gets involved. He tells her the government can move transdimensionally as well, all going back to the Philadelphia experiment. And her job to do this, they called it riding the light. Excuse me. She talks about being with Wayne Cox when he was running guns and cocaine operations for Johnston. And one run had her meet none other than Governor Bill Clinton, where she asserts that he used Jesuit hand signals and triggers to access a programmed message within her. Because later she tells us that she was in a thing called Operation Carrier Pigeon, I think is what it was called. And she would give a message and then give him cocaine as part of this drug running operation. Another trigger term is a chosen one, referring to her selection as a monarch candidate. Now, at this point, Alex Houston takes over for Wayne Cox as her handler after she moves to Tennessee with Kelly. She says that she got ritually impregnated and then aborted. I don't understand why you would do that, but that's the claim. She says in the early 80s, her base programming actually happened at Fort Campbell in Kentucky by none other than Michael Aquino, right? Who she claims was charged with child ritual sexual assault at the Presidio in San Francisco. She says the programming involved sadistic sex and drug muling and blackmail and all this stuff. Now, Michael Aquino, the Satanist psyop dude from the army, was never officially charged, but he was investigated with Presidio. Again, this is a massive rabbit hole, especially because Paul Vallely, the guy who wrote the book with Aquino about psyops to mind war, is part of Turning Point USA with Erica Kirk, which leads a lot of crazy ideas. There's a wild part of the story I'm going to read to you. I'm going to tell you what she says. During the 3 months I was back with Wayne Cox, a muscle in my upper vagina wall was cut and dropped in preparation for Houston to flesh carve a hideous witch's face for Senator Byrd's perversion. Aquino provided the ancient instructions on how to mutilate me, and Houston used silver nitrate and hot X-Acto knives to carve the details of the face without any form of anesthesia. By flexing the muscle downward, the face protruded out of my vagina. Not only did this surgery give Byrd a vagina suited to his minute underdeveloped penis, it also provided an equitable curiosity to be displayed over and over again in both commercial and non-commercial pornography and prostitution. You see what I'm saying? I can't say this on YouTube. She would be forced to marry Alex Houston, and she got some more programming in Huntsville, but it was when she got with NASA that she got this presidential model programming, and this would, she says, entailed using sensory deprivation tanks and virtual reality and harmonics and all kinds of stuff. And she says her daughter was also exposed to this this mind control fragmentation of the mind, right? She would also view pornography movies like How to Create a Sex Slave. And this was a way to show what she called spin programming to unlock specific memories. She talks about Wizard of Oz and how that was a lot of the programming for the keys, triggers, and codes for her operations she was forced to do. And that Oz was used because it lends itself to themes commonly used by perpetrators, like how people with MPD suffer loss of pets during ritualized torture. Just like Dorothy, right? And Dorothy has to go over the rainbow to risk her life to save her pet who got traumatically taken from her. And there's this scrambling of dreams versus reality, and personalities can get switched up. And that made me think of Twin Peaks and David Lynch, who, you know, as you know, Lynch says he thinks about Wizard of Oz every day, and it's all over his art. The experience ends up feeling like a bad dream instead of an actual memory, all right? Just like what happens to Dorothy when she wakes up in The Wizard of Oz. She says that comedians are used as slave handlers for the CIA because they have a way of accessing the subconscious mind where MPD operates from. She was sent to Youngstown, Ohio for charm school, which she says is just the name for sex slave training, which she claims it was operated by the Mellon banking family. And the school was all about how to do perversions for high-level politicians, right? And the techniques used were trauma, deprivation of food, water, and sleep, high-voltage stuff, drugs, and all kinds of stuff. And she says they were locked in a dungeon with animals like a black goat they called Satan and a donkey called Nestor and a white pony called Trigger. And these animals were then conditioned to have sex with the victims whenever they would smell urine. So what they would do is they would pee on her, and then they would have the animals force themselves on her and, I guess, record it, right? She would be photographed for Larry Flint from Hustler. She said another victim that she knew was forced to marry Arlen Specter, where he was a handler. She says that Chris Christopherson was involved with all of this stuff. Now, here's an interesting thing, and this is one of the interesting takeaways from the book that I thought was curious. Robert Byrd said mind control was needed to thrust mankind into accelerated evolution, according to the Nazis, because they were trying to bring about Bible prophecies of world peace and the New World Order, which is why the Mormons and the Pope actually cooperate with all of this. And he tells her that 95% of the world population want to be controlled by the 5%. And that 95% don't even want to know what the government's actually doing. They don't care. And all of this is based on the idea that the Nazis are creating a superior race. Now, that stands out to me because I think, I don't know, like sometimes it does be like that. It seems like it's like 95% of people do not care about nothing. They are just in their own world, and I think, man, that would be nice. Ignorance is bliss. But I'm too much of a, I don't like control and authority, so I'm not the kind of guy that's just going to be like, yeah, okay, tell me what to do. We're cool. You know what I mean? She talks about the Swiss Villa Amphitheater in Missouri, and that was a place where they would do this stuff, and also human hunting. Abuse included having to work like slaves. They would only eat 300 calories a day and get just 2 hours a night of consecutive sleep. She said the only war on drugs was the CIA versus its competition. Oh, snap. I actually believe that. And she said they would store drugs in the Mormon food storage, Bishop's warehouses, which that checks. I don't know if they have drugs there, but there is all these things called the Bishop food storage warehouses where people would, if you need food from in Utah, like if you're, I'm not Mormon, I don't know, but, and I wasn't raised here, but apparently if you're hungry and you want food, you can go get food from them, but then you got to do some work in the food storage warehouses or something like that. And recall the LDS have all these connections to Freemasonry, the occult, and the intelligence agencies that we've talked about. She says Jimmy Buffett was a CIA operative operating out of Key West. And again, he was using these trigger phrases like the bird, Robert Byrd, you know, Hitchcock's birds, Robert Byrd. And he said you respond with pair o' dice, looking deep into your parrot eyes. Kind of like Gary Busey talk, if you ever listen to him. He programmed her to do drug runs before sexually assaulting her, and he said, "Do you like a buffet? I have a buffet for you now." She says Ronald Reagan would tell Kathy the covert ops of where she worked were part of the necessary evil for America's freedom train. And again, that freedom train is one of the coded phrases and triggered terms she uses. And that all this sex is part of the necessary things they have to do. And the population can't understand how significant these operations are to arm these countries and do all this drug running and stuff because, you know, dummies, right? She says sex slaves and mind control victims should somehow be happy. This is what Reagan told her, that these victims should somehow be happy that they can do all these things for their country. Otherwise, they would just be living this miserable life in a third world country. Okay. Ronald Reagan would also sexually assault Kathy, according to her, allegedly. And he apparently also loved videos with the animals, allegedly. Crazy stuff. She talks about a guy named Michael Dante who gets in the mix. And Kathy says that the mafia and the government have a very close working relationship through covert activities. And again, I'm like, I don't know, that kind of checks out. And then you got the CIA assassination manual and so on. She names a bunch of people. Dodgers, what do you call it? The coach for the Dodgers, Tommy Lasorda, that Dante guy, the PA governor, Thornburg. And she says they were all rigging. Their part of the program is to rig baseball games, and the athletes are even mind controlled to win or lose it. And the mafia is in on all this. Reagan, Dick Cheney, and Michael Aquino apparently abused Kathy on a USO tour of sorts. Cheney had her hunted as a human for the human hunting. Cheney sexually assaulted her with this Tin Man Oz programming and Oz silence conditioning. She goes through, and there's more people she claims were involved. These are just like the ones that stood out to me. Alex Houston was apparently going to perform with Loretta Lynn. That's the person he managed in real life, in Atlantic City at the Playboy Club. Hugh Hefner also, you know, quite similar to some of these other monsters and blackmail tapes and such, allegedly, according to that show I watched on, what was it, the History Channel about the Playboy Mansion. She says Loretta was also mind controlled by a guy named Ken Riley. And this made me think of Sasha Riley. And I couldn't verify anything on Ken Riley online other than he was a manager for Loretta Lynn. You know, so if there's any private investigators out there, maybe run that one to ground. Is Ken Riley related to William Riley, the guy who was the handler for Sasha Riley? While in Atlantic City, Alex Houston activated her Monarch Oz programming as a presidential model, which included her wearing diamonds to signify that she's a presidential model. She said the ruby signifies Oz prostitution programming and the emeralds signify drug programming. That's just something interesting I thought we could keep in mind as we look at these symbols of all these folks doing stuff with the gems over the eye and all that crazy stuff. She talks about being used in Operation Carrier Pigeon to transport messaging. She said they would use the term kitten. That was the term for sex programming. That's where you get the conspiracy theory about sex kittens. She asserts there is no political affiliation. It's not a left or a right wing thing. She says everyone is in on mind control of the masses. She says, and I quote, "From my perspective, those who were actively laying the groundwork for implementing the New World Order through mind conditioning of the masses made no distinction between Democratic and Republican parties. Their aspirations were international in proportion, not American. Members were often drawn from, among other elitist groups, the Council on Foreign Relations. Like George Bush, Bill Clinton was an active member of the CFR, Bilderbergers, and Trilateral Commission. Based on numerous conversations I overheard, Clinton was being groomed and prepared to fill the role of president under the guise of Democrat in the event that the American people became discouraged with Republican leaders. This was further evidenced by the extent of Clinton's New World Order knowledge and professed loyalties." She goes on to talk about going on a CIA mind-controlled drug distribution hub in Missouri and how Clinton was there. Lee Greenwood, also part of this. Not the American, the America song guy. Not Lee Greenwood. She said the plan is for the drug running is to have Clinton's coke lines set up for trafficking cocaine, and Hillary knew about this. I looked it up. Lee Greenwood did, in fact, sing for President Clinton during his 1996 re-election campaign, so maybe. Kathy ends up going to Washington, D.C. and the White House with her daughter, who was three at the time, when they see President Reagan, VP Bush, and Cheney. And Reagan says to her, you know, hey, Bush is running everything. Which is kind of interesting because you heard this stuff when I remember when George W. was running it and Dick Cheney was the vice president. And everyone said, this is just Dick Cheney running the show. And the theory is that the vice president, who's behind the scenes, is the real authority. Which is, you know, kind of interesting, you know, huge if true. And drug trafficking is part of a global effort to control drug routes using the U.S. foreign policy. So when she says when America sends money to Mexico, it really is trying to allow us to have control over the drug trafficking routes. She talks about psychological conditioning through books and pop culture and popular kids shows because parents trust all these things and they use repetition and they're also emotionally charged, and they show kids authority figures through kings and queens and how disobedience leads to death and obedience leads to safety. And she says the stories are all about externalizing power through heroes, you know, through fairy godmothers or powerful male military types or princesses or elite bloodlines. She says the transformation themes actually reinforce the idea that your identity can be recoded. And that's what Oz and Alice are used so much for. Now, something interesting here. I like what she was saying here. And it was fascinating because Ronald Reagan was the guy that enabled cartoons in the 80s for kids like me, which were basically just giant advertisements to sell toys and action figures. And I'm okay with that because at the time, like, PBS was the only thing you could advertise towards kids because there was all these rules about it because they were like, don't mess with the kids. Just show them Sesame Street, whatever. And then Reagan was like, nah, I want them to have all these fun things. And to be fair, I'm happy he did it because although I was advertised to and programmed, I mean, those are pretty fun memories. I don't know what the right answer is there. Plus, I recall being traumatized watching the Transformers movie, the G.I. Joe movie. You see some of your, I'm not going to plot spoil, but you see some of the people you like die on these movies as a kid. And you're like, what? I'm ever traumatized by this stuff. So, again, she's right about that, I think. She talks about failures of institutions and deep states in all aspects of social life in America, between the government, entertainment, religion, everything's under control. And they coordinate all of this through Bohemian Grove, where the sex slaves are brought and blackmail is recorded. And this sounds all too familiar, right? I did a whole show about the guy on YouTube that infiltrated Bohemian Grove and saw that whiteboard. And I said, I postulated that the names and numbers you saw in those were the names of people with the ages of the, you know, sex worker that was in there with him, maybe, right? And Sasha Riley talked about Clarence Thomas being at these abuse parties. We know Clarence Thomas was at Bohemian Grove. It's just also kind of crazy, right? She calls the group that does all this stuff the Order of the Rose. And the rose was the necklace symbol that she got in the book earlier, if you recall. And she says it's a Catholic Jesuit symbol and sex programming trigger. Now, the rose and sex magic, the rose represents the yoni, the feminine principle. The red rose symbolizes the virginity or the menstrual blood. And all of this is life force opposing polarity, go with the Bob stuff, right? The rose is the womb of creation, the alchemical vessel to receive the energy, right? The recipient, like in Kabbalah, to receive. She says she meets with CIA Director Bill Casey, and he programs her as well with Jesuit mind control for missions under the World Vision Plan for a one-world government and church. She gets programmed by Michael Aquino at the Presidio and the Mount Shasta Lab with a thing called the Death's Door. She gets put into a coffin with sensory deprivation and given hypnotic sounds, and then they simulate her death to trigger intense fear and trauma to forced dissociation. Aquino would then pull her through death's door into a dimension without time where she is programmed for more operations on political leaders. And we're almost done. She saves the best for last. She talks about the Lizard of Oz, how some political elites like Bush are actually shape-shifting lizard people. And she implies that what they do is they use holograms. And she says it kind of looks like an illusion. And they tell her that they came from a bloodline of aliens who visited the Mayans and interbred with them. This includes the president of Mexico, Miguel de la Madrid, who is one of these shapeshifters and so on. And it kind of all ends with her, you know, she hooks up with Mark Phillips. He sells everything he owns and helps her recover all these memories. And in 1988, and he takes her and her daughter to Alaska to escape all of this. And they end up getting married. And that's Transformation of America. Okay. Now, it's a pretty wild set of claims being put forth, right? A little difficult to digest, kind of hard to believe, but there's enough things in there that stand out as, if you read this in the 90s, you'd probably be like, this is insane. You read it today, you're like, ah, some of that stuff's true. So it does make you wonder, right? But Project Monarch itself, again, has never been officially documented, but most of those MKUltra documents were destroyed. So who knows? And of course, these would be the ones they would destroy more than others. They want you to think, oh, the worst thing they did was they had prostitutes they were dosing in New York. It was probably worse. It's like the Epstein files. They're going to give us 1%, but the worst stuff's in the 99% they're not giving you. And her story is about abuse happening through the 80s. And, you know, Sasha Riley's story comes from the 80s as well. And this was the same time they were coordinating all the satanic panic stuff in pop culture, trying to dismiss it when in reality it was probably happening. And Kathy would go on to write another book called Access Denied in 2004. And then 2017, a book called PTSD Time to Heal. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. I question the whole recovered memories thing. From what my amateur understanding of it when I look online is that it's BS. So it makes me wonder about Mark Phillips and like, what's this guy's background? Is this part of an op? Did he plant those memories? So again, Kathy seems authentic when she talks and when she's in her interview with Freeman Fly. You know, I can't say I firmly believe 100% of the claims and people she makes. They're very sensational. But yet again, there's weird stuff actually happening. So, I mean, who am I to say? And I'm going to leave it up to you to decide. I mean, I could get on board with either side. I really could. It's hard to firmly believe everything because I'm more skeptical than most. I do believe that she believes it. Maybe some of those elements are a little off. Maybe not. Maybe they're all correct. I mean, who am I to say, right? All I do know, the thing that stands out the most intriguing is that some of those things check out. Just like the Sasha Riley story, I think the fact that some of this checks out is kind of unnerving. And I was curious about her daughter, Kelly, if she ever corroborated any of these stories. And there's only so much research I could do on this. You know, maybe someone out there who's done a little bit more can chime in the comments on the Patreon or whatever. There's a Substack by Foxy Fox that talks the same questions, and they found an X account that supposedly belongs to Kelly called Right and Right. This person claims they're still being mind controlled and abused. And, you know, I asked to follow because all the tweets are protected. Nothing yet. Kathy O'Brien, she tweets that the account is fake and that Kelly isn't even on social media. I don't know. It's something super ironic. I only looked up Kathy's account recently when I finished the book, and her post, she had a post about Mark Atwood singing to Kathy. And I'm actually, by the time you hear this, I'll probably have the interview done. I've got several interviews at the end of January, which is why I'm recording all this in early January, because I have to prep for all these interviews. Mark Atwood is one of those interviews, which is kind of wild, right? So I'm going to ask him about this. The Substack even questions if the ex account for Kathy O'Brien is really Kathy at all. So, because apparently in 2019, Kathy said she does not run her social media. She has an assistant named Sheila that runs it. So, I mean, it's a tough one, right? The names and the stories are pretty outrageous. But if you force me to come down on one side or the other, I say I believe it more than I don't. And the same with the shape-shifting lizard people. Like, there's a part of me that kind of believes that stuff. Do I have this proof or this passionate of like, yes, that's true. I don't have that, but I'm like, I kind of think it's true. That's kind of where I'm at with it. But yeah, and especially when you line up all the recent claims by Sasha Riley, which again, like, I don't know if his story is true, but it's some of that stuff kind of fits. All right. Now real briefly, And this is kind of sad that I'm not going to give it the full deep dive that it deserves, but this book is freaking massive. The Charles Manson book, Chaos by Tom O'Neill. I listened to the audiobook back when it came out, and I didn't have the conscious plan of doing a show about it. That was the only time I read this book, is when I listened to it, okay? And I think it's like 20 hours. It's huge. I had tagged some of the audio clips of things I found interesting, though, because I wasn't planning on doing a full show on it, but I tagged enough comments on it, like little bookmarks you can leave on the Audible, that there's several involving the MK Ultra aspect. So I'm going to give you my notes, and then I'm going to give you what the book says to support my notes. Again, very brief recap of O'Neill's book, which is actually an incredible book. If you're into Manson, which I'm deep into it, right? I've read many of the books, like the Helter Skelter story. This book debunks the whole thing. It debunks Helter Skelter. It debunks Bugliosi. It makes you question everything. All right. So let's just get into it, right? Because we're going to get into, I'm going to go through some of it. If you recall in David McGowan's book, he talks about Charles Manson, and he says that the Boys Town Juvenile Detention Center was part of the Franklin cover-up, okay? And he also lays out the ideas presented earlier about how our minds could be programmed, and somehow Manson would have the same thought. I'm going to read to you from the book. Oh, no, okay, here. Sorry, I got to make sense of my notes here. This passage I'm going to read to you, they talk about minds being like computers, and this is one of the main concepts that you'll find. This is where the idea of controlling us comes from, and it comes through John C. Lilly, who wrote a whole book about the mind as the biocomputer. All right. This is what the book's Chaos says. Ironically, as his followers became more and more robotic, Manson taught them that people in the straight world were like computers, the family's Brooks Poston wrote. Their worldviews were simply a matter of society's programming, and any program could be expunged. On the stand, Susan Atkins described Sharon Tate as an IBM machine. Words came out of her mouth, but they didn't make any sense to me. Now, this is all like MKUltra, right? The whole thing utilizing LSD and drugs. There's a lot of parallels, obviously, with how to inebriate the mind so you could program it. All right. And in Chaos, there's this section where they talk about going dead in the head, which is what would allow someone to absorb messaging into the subconscious. For a family novice, oh boy, he uses big words. I'm too stupid. For a family novitiate, the goal was to burn yourself out, to take so much LSD and listen to so much of Charlie's music that you return to a purity and nothingness, resembling a new birth, Tex Watson wrote. This was called going dead in the head, and it let you incorporate into the collective sharing one common brain. So it's kind of like going into the collective unconscious, the perennial philosophy, you know, that whole thing. The book also talks about how brainwashing works. This is kind of a long part. I'm going to read it to you, though.
Okay.
Former members of the family have often recounted Manson's systemic brainwashing methods, beginning with the seduction of new recruits by bombarding them with love, sex, and drugs. On the witness stand, Paul Watkins outlined the near-weekly orgies that Manson orchestrated at the Spahn Ranch. The leader would hand out drugs, personally deciding everyone's dosages. And then, as Bugliosi writes in Helter Skelter, Charlie might dance around, everyone else following like a train. As he'd take off his clothes, all the rest would take off their clothes. Charlie would direct the orgy, arranging bodies, combinations, positions. He'd set it all up in a beautiful way, like he was creating a masterpiece in sculpture, Watkins said. But instead of clay, he was using warm bodies. If any of those bodies had hang-ups or inhibitions, Manson would eliminate them. He'd force someone to do whatever he or she was most resistant doing. I'm sorry, what he or she most resisted doing. One 13-year-old girl's initiation into the family consisted of her being sodomized by Manson while the others watched, Bugliosi wrote. Manson also went down on a young boy to show the others he had rid himself of all inhibitions. Tex Watson, in his 1978 memoir, Will You Die For Me, tells a similar story. There was a room in the back of the ranch house totally lined with mattresses, he wrote, essentially set aside for sex. As we had any inhibitions, we still weren't dead. We were still playing back what our parents had programmed into us. Having made them feel freed and wanted, Manson would isolate his followers from the world beyond the ranch, giving them daily tasks to support the commune and forbidding them from communicating with their families or friends. His was a world without newspapers, clocks, or calendars. Manson chose new names for his initiates. In order for me to be completely free in my mind, I had to be able to completely forget the past, Susan Atkins testified. The easiest way to do this is to have to change identity. Their induction was complete after they participated in lengthy LSD sessions, often stretching over consecutive days with no breaks, during which Manson only pretended to take the drug or took a much smaller dose. Clear-headed, he manipulated their minds with elaborate word games and sensory techniques he developed in the 2 years since his release from prison. With only negligible downtime between acid trips, detachment was all the easier. Every experience led the family to drift further from reality until eventually even basic contradictions seemed tenable. Death was the same as life. Good was no different from bad. And God was inseparable from Satan. Go with the Bobs, right? Paul Watkins believed that Manson wanted to use LSD to instill his philosophies, exploit weaknesses and fears, and extract promises and agreements from his followers, and it worked. Watkins recalled an instance in which Manson told Susan Atkins, "I'd like half a coconut, even if you have to go to Rio de Janeiro to get it." Atkins got right up and was on her way out the door when Charlie said, "Never mind." Manson excelled, Watkins said, at locating deep-seated hang-ups. He took up residence in people's heads, leaving them with no point of reference, nothing to relate back to, no right, no wrong, no roots. They lived in a new reality summoned by LSD, which left them melt-twisted and free of pretension in timeless spirals of movement. So, obviously, I don't need to explain that to you, right? The LSD... He knew that could be used as a programming tool. How did he know that? Interesting. They would also use sensory deprivation techniques and such. And Manson would rewrite the code of their minds using occult practices that were also utilized by MKUltra. It says... The scientists explained how acid could break down and reconstruct someone's personality, how a sober guide intended to lead someone peacefully through the many hours of an acid trip could abuse the role, inserting violent ideals and beliefs into their minds. With repetition and reinforcement, these beliefs took root and flourished even when the followers were sober. Throw in other coercive techniques like sensory deprivation and hypnosis, both of which Manson embraced, and it was possible to rewrite someone's moral code. We saw that kind of stuff with the hypnosis was a key factor in MKUltra, and the sensory deprivation tank, as you know, is like in Stranger Things and so on like that. and then as usual, it's all about disrupting the left and communism, which is your motive here, right? Because COINTELPRO, the FBI's program, just break down communist subversives, and Project Chaos had these objectives to disrupt the left under any means necessary. Let's see here. I focused on two secret intelligence operations that were underway in Los Angeles in 1969, the FBI's COINTELPRO and the CIA's Chaos. Their primary objective, according to three congressional committees that investigated them in the mid-70s, was to discredit the left-wing movement by any means necessary, an aim that, coincidentally or not, described exactly the effect of the Manson murders. So there you go. Illuminate confirmed that this was the plan and that he was part of that. There's a little bit more. We find out that Chaos and COINTELPRO actually started the same month of August 1967 to further emphasize this point. As anti-war demonstrations spilled from campuses into the streets, Johnson ordered the FBI and the CIA to take action. That August, with the president's approval, CIA Director Richard Helms authorized an illegal domestic surveillance program codenamed Chaos. Meanwhile, J. Edgar Hoover's revived the FBI's dormant counterinsurgency program, COINTELPRO. Both agencies opened their first offices, the first offices of their respective operations in San Francisco, still considered ground zero for the revolution, especially since the founding of the Black Panther Party in nearby Oakland the previous summer. Now, as you already know, guess where Manson was hanging out, you know, when he got out of prison? He was hanging out in San Francisco with the hippies. Sorry, my voice is giving out, folks. This is why, that's why Alex Jones talks like this. My voice is giving out. Manson's Helter Skelter actually followed the aims of COINTELPRO and Chaos. I'm going to read you from the book. There had been a day in the summer of 69 when the major elements from my reporting collided on a single page of the LA Times. An August 12th article about the DA's argument in the UCLA Panther murder trial ran next to a piece on the LAPD's theory that the LaBianca killers were imitating the people who had murdered the Tate victims the night before. The irony was that both of these stories were wrong. The LaBianca murders weren't the work of a copycat killer, and the police should have known by then the real power play at UCLA was perpetrated by the FBI. I was tantalized by the juxtaposition of the two items, by how much of the news in them was flawed when it was first reported, and by how much of it might still be flawed. Manson's race war motive dovetailed almost too perfectly with the goals of these federal agencies and the DA's office. In programs like Chaos and COINTELPRO, and in people like Reeve Whitson, William Herman, and Buck Compton, I saw the potential for a major turn in my reporting, even as I tried to accept that so much of what they did would always be untraceable. Still, if nefarious plots from the CIA and FBI had eventually exploded into public view, I thought I should at least try to see where my hunches led me. What I wanted to answer was this. How did a body like the Los Angeles DA's office exert its political force? If it wanted to be of service to a higher agency like the FBI or CIA, would that be easily accomplished, or was I veering too much into the realm of the paranoiac? We're almost done. I got two more passages. All right. So Manson was going to the Haight-Ashbury Free Medical Clinic in San Francisco, and this is where it connects into the sort of accusation being made. And he was seeing two Dr. Smiths there, right? Same place. And the doctors were receiving federal and private funds to study the effects of LSD and speed on mind control. Manson was using both of these drugs for mind control. And these people were being studied to do it. Because as you know, the MKUltra program was to pay various places for various studies. I'm going to read from the book. Among the Haight-Ashbury Free Medical Clinic alumni I spoke to, the understanding was Manson had visited the clinic on many occasions to see Roger for their mandatory parole meetings. Roger himself would later claim that the family simply came by out of the blue for no particular reason, and that they didn't begin seeing him there until after his duties as Manson's parole officer had ended. In either case, something about the arrangement didn't sit well with me. One reason the Haight-Ashbury was free, after all, was that David, Roger, and their colleagues had received private and federal grants to conduct drug research there. The Smiths were both studying amphetamines and LSD, the latter being the crucial component of Manson's reprogramming process. How had an uneducated ex-con, someone who months ago had never taken acid and maybe never even heard of it, come to use the drug to such sophisticated ends? And wasn't it suspicious, at least, that he was coming to the Haight-Ashbury to see two people who were studying that very phenomenon, the use of drugs to control and change behavior? At least one friend of Roger's had foreseen that it would be a conflict of interest. I always thought there would be problems. Another noted, Roger had really made a career at that point in trying to help Manson. He was going to soothe the savage beast. He said the beast grew more savage than ever. Now, a bunch of stuff led the public to believe that mind control wasn't even possible. But then Dr. Jolly West's papers proved he could make someone forget a memory and replace it with something else. Last passage. Maybe because West had achieved one of MKUltra's most coveted goals, despite testimony to the contrary, the CIA had in fact learned how to manipulate people's memories without their knowledge. Agency officials claimed the program had been a colossal failure, leading newspapers to run mocking headlines like "The Gang That Couldn't Spray Straight." It could have been exactly what the agency wanted, for the world to assume MKUltra was a bust and forget the whole thing. One thing was indisputable: the CIA's falsified documents invalidated the Senate's investigation's findings. The agency lied, obstructed justice, and tampered with evidence, and the West documents prove it. So, in conclusion, we're done. We're done. MKUltra, one of those topics that proves conspiracies can be real. And it's a fitting way to end on that last section from Chaos, where he even says, maybe they wanted us to believe mind control wasn't real. And I said that throughout this whole series. Why would they continue to pay for this thing if there was no results at all? Okay. But conspiracies can be real, especially heinous research projects by the people that swore to protect us. That's why you have to be careful about looking up to these people too much and not checking them, you know. I know these politicians run and they're, you know, like, I love Bernie Sanders, right? But even if he became the president, I would still be checking on his ass. Like, okay, let's see what this dude's doing, right? You can't trust them. It shows that there is a vested interest in suppressing the free will of humanity. That's what the whole program was. Whether it's to carry out murders for the elites or to simply control us, the question is, how far does all of this extend? Is mind control programming inserted into pop culture films and television in order to control us? You know, McGowan's book, The Vietnam Phoenix Program, and the Kathy O'Brien story, they all support the idea that really works. Trauma and terror could cause fundamental changes in our society by shifting our views. Which is probably why you get all these crazy events, right? The Vegas concert, the 9/11 thing, the pandemic. Trauma works to make our minds very malleable. And it could be they're conditioning us towards acceptance of the New World Order, acceptance of law and order, the obedience of a fascist controller, all part of the One World Order government, right? Because the New World Order is an obedient order. Like, why do you think that is? It's because they want full control. They want a dictator to tell us what to do. In Kathy O'Brien's book, they said, look, 95% want this. They want to just be told what to do. And to be fair, I think the human nature is a lot of people are like that. Not me, not you, my dear listener. I know we're not those people, but look at the people out there. They want to be told what to do. They externalize their power and choices into these other people, these maniacs. So if all that's true, and entertainment is just this Roman bread and circus used to pacify us and keep us on this capitalist hamster wheel in order to benefit who? The corporations and the elites. And that's most likely why they destroyed the documents, because the truth goes much deeper than just some victims being drugged. Furthermore, it shows how the government can carry out experiments that are claimed to keep us safe against the boogeyman. They need a boogeyman, right? Then the boogeyman for this was the communists of Soviet Union, which has a darker path towards nuclear annihilation, right? The Cold War fears. They're like, if we're not doing this, you know, you want this nuke to go off on your head? And these programs also support the claims about the technocracy and the dark enlightenment ideas. And their views of the human race, they do not look upon us kindly. You know, John C. Lilly wrote a book about the mind as a biocomputer, which supports this idea that we repeat over and over. They want to reduce us to simple binary digits to be programmed for the benefit of the state or the corporate America in the digital matrix. And the same ideas you could see presented by this false evolution and these weirdos like Jonas Salk and Elon Musk that are convinced they can improve humanity through whatever wackadoodle ideas they have. So is MKUltra safe and effective? No, it's not. They claimed it was a failure. I don't believe them. I think that they have to tell us that because they don't want us to know the truth, right? Why would they tell us, like, hey, we can mind control you guys and program assassins and killers and let us know that they can do the same thing to us, you know? Is Project Monarch real? I don't know. I don't know. I don't put it past any of this, though. I mean, the mere fact of the matter of what they're interested in doing to us tells me that they could pull this off. These psychopaths abusing kids and women and boys and men as well, you know. Look at the Epstein case, the biggest cover-up in history. Look at the Marc Dutroux case at the beginning of David McGowan's book. We didn't talk about it, but it's just like the Epstein thing. Look at Sandusky from Penn State. Look at the Franklin cover-up. All those things. There's all of these horrific things. You find out that there's a larger ring of people above the people that got caught. But we never find out more about it because it's set up like a secret society with the Omerta, the vow of silence, these inner orders that report to higher orders. So if there is an Illuminati, they are 100% interested in mind control to keep the masses pacified and keep us on a leash. And why wouldn't they, right? We're the threat to the elites. They want us conditioned to accept the one world order and the technocrat digital matrix. And what sparked all of this, as we learned in the book, science fiction, right? These nerds read too much science fiction, which I don't have a problem with science fiction. I like the arts. But the problem is you have unstable people, these nerds, they read this and they're like, I want to make that reality. They see Minority Report and get people like us are like, oh, that was kind of spooky. Ooh, these nerds are like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to retina scan to buy groceries or whatever. Because what they want is control. They want to burn the system down because they feel rejected from society. So as always, same conclusion, these nerds are going to kill us, as usual. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening to this many hours of me talking about MKUltra. I'm exhausted with researching it. I never want to read another MKUltra book, but I surely will. I surely will. You're going to get a part five someday, somewhere down the line. I'm going to say, holy crap, this needs to be done. But thank you for your support. Thanks for listening to the show. Till next time. Stay positive.